You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
You've got this tug of war going on between the government and the Bank of England. That doesn't lead to a stable situation.
We must face up to the fact that for too long, our economy has not grown enough.
I'm prepared to do what it takes to get us through these difficult times, to get us through this difficult winter, and to come out stronger as a country.
Hello, you're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics, your daily guide to the corridors of power. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Today, the dust settles on the ashes of Trussonomics. The Prime Minister says sorry, but can she rescue her premiership? We'll get the view of our opinion columnist, Therese Raphael.
Plus, even after the U-turns, the government still needs to find billions of pounds more in cuts. So we'll speak to our UK economy reporter, David Goodman, about the numbers and where those savings are going to come from.
But first, an apology.
We have made mistakes. I'm sorry for those mistakes, but I've fixed the mistakes. I've appointed a new chancellor. We have restored economic stability and fiscal discipline. And what I now want to do is go on and deliver for the public.
So Liz Truss there doing the rarest of things in a politician's life, saying sorry. But will it work? Does it come too late? Joining us now is Bloomberg opinion columnist Therese Raphael. What do you think? Is it going to work?
Well, I guess it depends on what we mean by work. If we mean, will it keep her in office for this week until Christmas? You know, it's possible, but not because so much that she apologized, but because the Tory party doesn't have a clear path forward to replacing her. I mean, it can certainly change the rules of the 1922 committee that prohibited a challenge for a full year after she assumed office. It can do that for sure.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There's not an easy replacement for Liz Truss. It can bring in Jeremy Hunt, but you know, will that unite the party beyond the immediate kind of need to stabilize? And so I think the apology, plus bringing on Hunt, plus repudiating her entire agenda, all of those things we've seen in the last 4 days, you know, they've extended her life as prime minister a while. But it's hard to see, you know, what is the point of Liz Truss staying on? She is now standing for everything that she decried and criticized as a candidate. And so there's a huge gap to bridge between where she is now and, you know, what she campaigned on. And it's not clear how she's going to do that.
Yeah, let's pause for a moment, though, on the actual apology element, because I had to beetle off and do a little bit of research into whether
homework.
whether saying sorry actually does mean that you get to save your job. And there's quite a bit of research actually about whether and how you apologise in a business scenario when stuff goes really badly wrong. And some of the elements that I've sort of pulled apart, like Harvard Business School and others, you have to take responsibility, talk about future behaviour changes, the timing of when you do it, and exactly who you apologise to are all elements apparently in the sorry that really matter. So to my mind, if you pull this apart, the major question for me is that Liz Truss, when it comes to kind of the investors and people in the City of London, she didn't really take responsibility for what she did, Stephen.
Well, it's that, if you go down that, sorry, Therese, but if you go down that checklist, yeah, like there aren't many of those elements that kind of match up to what we heard. But there's something quite psychological about that. All of the headlines today, you know, Prime Minister says sorry. That is something that it doesn't come very often in such a clear and unambiguous format. But I just can't help but feel that it comes far too late. Therese.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I mean, we all have seen kids, you know, that when they fight in the schoolyard and, you know, they're told to say sorry and they just sort of say sorry. And it's kind of they've sort of hurled it out there. They're not really sorry. They didn't really, you know, they don't really wish they didn't throw that punch. But, you know, I think all along we've seen with Truss is that she's sort of hunkered down. You know, she does come from that school of don't explain, don't apologize, you know, and she's been forced to just kind of eat her words. I mean, really quite literally. I don't think it was accompanied with a really clear explanation of what they got wrong. And what she might have said is, look, you know, we still believe that Britain needs to be, and she has said this in sort of other ways, that needs to get to, you know, to low taxes. This is why we shouldn't have done it the way we did, and this is what we could have done differently. And I think the right of the party that supported her, that she courted so assiduously during that campaign, they're going to be furious, because not only is she just torpedoed her entire, you know, agenda premiership, but she's really buried for years, maybe a generation, the whole kind of premise of, you know, call it supply side economics or libertarian thinking or whatever. And some of that part of the party is going to say, you never gave it a chance. You didn't do it properly. And, you know, now basically that, you know, you can't put a cigarette paper between Jeremy Hunt and Keir Starmer.
Yeah, I mean, begrudging is the word then, isn't it, in terms of the apology? And you're right. I mean, that goes deep, doesn't it? The Conservatives, the kind of split between the different factions of the ruling party. But the thing is, externally, you look at YouGov polls, only 1 in 10 people in Britain now have a favourable opinion of the Prime Minister, 80% unfavourable. But does the public opinion actually matter when, you know, Truss is clinging on, as it were, hour by hour?
Well, I mean, going back to your, you know, first question, how long can she last? I think the public opinion is just pivotal in that question for the Tory party. So do they try to replace her now and just stem the bleeding? You know, do they let her hang on and hope that with the markets stabilizing, with Hunt having a new program, that things will sort of lift? I mean, you'd expect the polls to narrow a little bit over time, but, you know, if you're really looking at a situation where the Scottish National Party is the official opposition, if an election were held tomorrow, I mean, that's pretty shocking for the Tories, and they will need to decide quite quickly what their best course of action is. But I also think things could get worse, right? You know, we haven't seen the worst of it. If in April, for example, energy prices that the consumer pays skyrocket and the government hasn't put in sufficient support, I think Jeremy Hunt has some really excruciating decisions to make, as he himself has acknowledged, and including between, you know, do you spend 3% of GDP on defense, you know, or do you spend on health? I don't think he's going to be able to do everything. It's quite clear he's not. So where are those, what sort of choices is he going to be made? So he gets credit now for stabilizing things.
Yeah.
But, you know, then there are these tough decisions, and this will be called an austerity government, as well as a taxing government, because in the end, at the end of this parliament, taxes are going to be up to their highest level, you know, outside of wartime, 36% of GDP. Yeah. That's not a good look for a Conservative Party.
No, and indeed, already you can see that Labour are making hay out of this. Look, in Parliament yesterday, Labour Stella Creasy asking Penny Mordaunt where the Prime Minister was in Parliament. Take a listen.
The Leader of the House suggests that we should be grateful that the Prime Minister has made a difficult decision, and I presume she means grateful that she stuck to it, given the number of U-turns that we've seen over the last couple of days. But that's the job, making difficult decisions. There are difficult decisions to be made about what is happening in Ukraine, about the fact that President Putin has nuclear weapons, about the chaos caused by Brexit, gang crime, the climate crisis, Ebola in Africa. And all we know right now is, unless she tells us otherwise, that the Prime Minister is cowering under her desk and asking for it all to go away. Isn't it about time she did and let somebody else who can make decisions in the British national interest get in charge instead?
Yeah. Well, the Prime Minister is not under a desk as the She... I can assure the House that she is, with regret, she is not here for a very good reason.
Hang on a second.
The House was not reassured, we should point out.
No, and there were absolute guffaws. I mean, did Penny Mordaunt do that on purpose or not? Perhaps I'm being cynical in asking that question, but, you know, you were just mentioning, Therese, the sort of big picture, longer term. How does the Conservative government manage all of these big, big decisions? But we're in the minutiae of the crisis now still, aren't we? And we've got Prime Minister's questions tomorrow. Does Liz Truss actually show up at what would be only her third PMQs?
Yeah, I think she absolutely has to show up, or, you know, the under the desk or rattling in the attic or whatever the metaphor of the day is just going to be, you know, the headline that she can never get rid of. And I mean, Penny Mordaunt, in a way, she handled that period of standing in for Liz Truss obviously quite well. And I think it was an audition of sorts for someone who had wanted to be leader, came very close to being selected by MPs, and then rode in behind Liz Truss and was rewarded with a cabinet position. But she will be, you know, seething, as will, you know, many of those around the cabinet who now have to go and defend, you know, quite the opposite of what they were told. They were, you know, assembled as a cabinet to get behind in terms of policies. So, you know, what does Truss do at this point to restore just like a crumb of credibility? It's really hard to say. I mean, the only thing we could say is that her weakness is in some ways a strength, because if she completely falls apart even further, the Tories still have to come up with someone to run the government. They still have to have a cabinet. They still have to try to restore credibility. Until they can decide who replaces Liz Truss and what the direction of government is, you know, for the moment, she's still warming the seat. I think the minute they know what comes next, there will be a yet another change, U-turn, whatever we want to call it.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes
You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Believe it or not, Liz Truss has only been Prime Minister for 6 weeks. So how did it all go so badly wrong for her? We've been discussing this with Joey Jones, who is the former spokesperson for Theresa May, another Conservative leader who was under a great deal of pressure at various points. Now he's senior counsel at Grayling.
I've been asking myself this question a bit. I think it seems to be that there was a degree of complacency about government borrowing that had built up over, you know, the backwash of the financial crisis. Then huge sums were spent on COVID support, and some people, I would stress people like Rupert Harrison, were suggesting that this could almost go on forever. So I think there was a blithe complacency about the way that they laid out the mini budget. I think there was also a degree of contempt for some of the institutions that we now see are so critical to financial credibility. So the Office for Budget Responsibility was put in place by George Osborne, who is, you know, no great friend now, it seems, to Liz Truss. And again, I don't think that they treated that institution with the respect that it deserved. So to the Bank of England. But you put all of that cocktail together, and of course it landed them with a situation that blew up in their face, and more to the point, blew up in the face of the whole of the, you know, the British economy, households and businesses and the rest of it. We're going to be paying the price for that.
Indeed. And our own economists have crunched the numbers, and they're looking at an additional £10 billion a year as a result of the ruptures within the gilt markets. That being said, in the last couple of days, of course, what's happened in the markets is there's a little bit more sense of optimism, but a bit more sense of calm within the context, of course, of the significant rout that we saw because Jeremy Hunt has come back and gutted most of the plans. So to what extent does that give, do you think, the Prime Minister cover in the days and weeks ahead, do you think, Joey?
I think if she were able to show a sureness of touch herself, then she might be able to stumble on. But unfortunately, I think that she just comes across as though she's completely divorced from the reality of what is confronting her politically. Economically, yes, I think that, you know, it feels as though there is more credibility, things are calmer. But I think the damage has been done in terms of Liz Truss's already shaky authority within the parliamentary party, because let's not forget the bulk of parliamentarians on the Conservative side actually supported Rishi Sunak. But her authority is just gutted now. And you see her doing interviews last night with Chris Mason from the BBC. She just doesn't seem to be able to project any sort of lightness of touch, any sort of empathy for people, as I say, who are dealing with the consequences of those mistakes that she is now holding her hands up to. No lightness of touch, no ability to sort of flex with very fast moving political events. And I think that that is going to mean that she is on borrowed time. It's really a question of when, not if.
Yeah, surely if you were advising her, would you just be telling her to go now? I mean, what is the least worst option for the Conservative Party?
Well, the current situation is humiliating for her. You could see how awkward it was for her sitting at the dispatch box and listening to Jeremy Hunt eviscerating her. Her plan, her project, everything that she had been hoping for. I don't suppose, frankly, that the idea of trooping out of the door of number 10 in abject humiliation would be a particularly attractive one for her, probably faster than pretty much any other prime minister. And so she's going to try to cling on. I wouldn't want to be advising her right at the moment, but I'm afraid the situation is that unless she can suddenly transform herself into a political operator who, as I say, can project those qualities of empathy, fleetness of foot, lightness of touch, that sort of thing that seem to be right at the moment utterly beyond her, I cannot see how she can last in the job.
So that was the former press secretary to Theresa May, Joey Jones, there speaking to me and to Tom McKenzie a bit earlier this morning. Yeah, what was really astonishing that Joey Jones wouldn't even want to give her advice, you know, potentially the shortest serving prime minister in British history.
Yeah, I mean, that is a pretty damning picture painted there by Joey Jones. Of course, the challenges still facing the government are pretty enormous. They've rolled back on £32 billion of the £45 billion of tax cuts, but there's still a hole that's going to be made up. Bloomberg Economics says that looks at around £12 billion. You know, junking Truss's economic plans has left her enfeebled, but where next for the UK economy? Let's speak to Bloomberg's UK economy and Bank of England reporter David Goodman, who's with us in studio. Hi, David.
Hi.
It feels like everyone gets a policy portmanteau these days. Trussonomics, Huntonomics, Sunakonomics. Economically, what has changed from Truss's plan to Jeremy Hunt's one?
I think everything is a pretty good answer to that. I mean, there was something fantastic that I saw on Twitter last night from Torsten Bell from the Resolution Foundation. He said, in a sign of how big this switch is, the mini budget in September was the biggest tax cut in budget since 1972. Yesterday was the biggest series of tax hikes since 1993. So that's just put it into context of how big that swing was. And I mean, there's almost nothing left from what Kwarteng said on September the 23rd. We've got the next cut still in there and a couple of other things, but everything else is just on the floor. And Hunt is now in the driving seat for fiscal policy, and he obviously has a very different philosophy from Truss. And yeah, it's going in a completely different direction.
Okay, so this is a wild yo-yo ride that we've been on. So are we in for austerity 2.0, as Labour put it? I mean, Hunt has not ruled out more windfall taxes or a kind of any kind of windfall taxes, particularly around energy companies, but there could even be some on banks.
Yeah, well, I think what was really interesting about what Hunt said on yesterday morning in that statement, that he laid out policy by policy he was scrapping from the mini-budget. And at the end, he said, plus, there are more difficult decisions still to come. And he's talked about tax rises, but he also talked about spending cuts. And I think when we come to October the 31st, they're going to have to be spending cuts to help address this black hole that people are talking about. And yeah, that's obviously not great news when you're going to have an economy that was going to have this big sugar rush of tax cuts, and that was going to help hopefully avoid too deep a recession next year. Now, not only have we haven't got those cuts, we also have spending cuts, and that's going to obviously be a drag. And people's energy bills now, they were going to be paid, they kept a particular level for 2 years. Now it's only lasting until this spring, and the numbers that people could be paying next year are kind of scarily high again. And that's what we were talking about over the summer, about this cost of living crisis. So that's kind of back on, and you've got austerity and you haven't got the tax cut. So yeah, I mean, the outlook is looking pretty bleak. And I think on austerity, Hunt obviously set up this council of advisors for him. And one really interesting thing about that is that Rupert Harrison's on that. And he was a big advisor to George Osborne in the aftermath of the financial crisis. So he really knows how to kind of implement these kind of policies. And the rest of that team, well, all very well-respected economists within markets, but they're all very much of a type that Truss wasn't speaking to. They're not from her kind of economic stable. So that's kind of quite interesting.
Well, one person that she was speaking to was Jared Lyons, her external advisor, someone that we've spoken to regularly on Bloomberg Radio. He's pointing out today that the growth plan, in his words, was constructive, something I endorsed at the time, as did the major business groups. The mini-budget fed the misplaced idea, he says, this was a dash for growth like the Barber boom and not a plan for growth aimed at boosting investment. Have we lost any kind of important key element in the philosophy behind that plan, that the UK does need more investment to boost growth?
Yeah, and I think that's potentially one of the fallouts from this, is that you still need growth in the economy. Like, with one of the reasons that the OBR are probably going to come up with such a terrible number this month is because of a hit to growth as well. So there's so much stuff that needs to be done to help boost growth in the economy. A lot of supply side stuff, which I think Jared Lyons has been talking about, and doesn't carry this kind of big shock and wouldn't be something that would spook the markets. That stuff needs to be done. So if you lose focus on that because of this need to kind of bring back some market credibility, then it's kind of the worst of both worlds, really, isn't it, that we're looking at the moment?
Yeah, you talked about that new council of sort of, I mean, it used to be called wise men. I mean, I'll call them wise advisors. Because, yes, it includes Rupert Harrison. You've got Gertjan Vliet. You've got Sushil Wadhwani. And also Karen Ward. So they are kind of former Bank of England advisors to policymakers. Two of them are former advisors to former chancellors. I mean, how important is that? Is that basically the return to orthodoxy? Are we there? Have we pivoted in one almighty, you know, swoop from throwing orthodoxy out to bring it back in? Or, you know, or is it more unstable? Because there are others who are saying, hang on, Are we seesawing in the way that Italy does between technocrats and then kind of populists?
I think it was Hunt really saying, like, this is who we are now. This is who I am as a chancellor. These are the, because when he was talking, he said, I'm going to bring in a panel of independent people as well. And as he said that, I was thinking, oh, who'll that be? I wonder whether that'll bring some of the kind of architects of what Truss wanted to do alongside some more mainstream voices, perhaps, and kind of have a compromise. But instead, it was entirely people from the Orthodox, as you say. I mean, incredibly smart, incredibly well-respected people. Yes. Like Karen Ward, obviously, she's been on the radio all the time. Like, her views are really well-respected in the market.
Vliet, JP Morgan.
Yeah. And Vliet, when he was at the bank, everyone thought he was one of the best people there. And his views kind of carry a lot of weight. But there's nothing in there of the policies that Truss was looking to implement. Even last month, like, no one's going to be advocating for a return to those on that council. So it's a kind of another sign of how Hunt is just, he is now the person in the driving seat. Like, what Truss wants to do isn't going to happen. So he's got his team in, he's got these advisors in, and that's the kind of direction of travel for the foreseeable future.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.